Report. Today, I'm going to be covering permissibility of lying, thanks to places like the New York Times. Well, the New York Times is making the news for all sorts of reasons that a newspaper should never make the news. Collusion is one of them this week, and we'll be talking about that also. But playing the part of the willingly ignorant, and that is why we're talking about permissibility of lying in Islam today. So because this is a Christian news show, I want to get started with reading from the Word of God. Today we're reading Hebrews 2, verses 3 to 4. How shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? God also bearing them witness, both the signs and wonders with diverse miracles and gifts of the Holy Spirit according to his own will. This passage is part of the warning that J. Vernon McGee mentions. Think about this. What can you do to go to hell? Nothing. What do you have to do to earn hell? Nothing. God sent his son so that all may live and have eternal life. He offered his son so that all may have this chance to become joint heirs. Can you imagine being joint heirs with the Son of God? That's what it's being offered here. That just to blow your mind when you think about it. Again, he offered his son so that all may have the chance to become joint heirs. That few accept, said. What are they doing when they hear about this work of Christ? Nothing. They neglect the offer of salvation. But what is required to act on this offer that God presents? A simple acceptance, that's it. A belief. No vow to do this or that. No requirement to change who you are. God does that for you. All you have to do is accept that God first loved you and that his son Jesus died on the cross for your sins. But to neglect this gift leaves you on a road to hell, that road to hell forevermore. Now, Jesus didn't come and simply just proclaim who he was. He did many miracles, so many that even those who didn't think him to be the Son of God wrote about him. He offered signs and wonders to those present, not in their time, but in his time. The greatest of all these miracles was his resurrection from the dead. Dear Lord Jesus, so many say no through neglecting the offer of salvation that you put before them. Lord, we beg of you that those we know may come to know you as their Savior. You've changed our lives, Lord. You brought us happiness and joy. I know my life has meaning, Lord. I owe you so much because of what you've done in my life. Lord, use us. Use us that we can help others to see the great rewards in serving you. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, here's the cool thing. If you like these little devotions that I'm sharing, you can, if you're interested, one of the things you'll find when you go to Amazon and you type in my name are devotionals that I write. What I do is I write one a day, and eventually they become part of a book. So I have about 4 or 5 unpublished devotionals, which I'll be working on getting out pretty soon. But there's a few more out there. So that's just something you could do if you want to learn more about Christ and more about the scriptures. This is my way of sharing. I really enjoy reading the Word of God, and I hope I can pass that on to you. If there's anything I can pass on, that's it. But today, the theme today basically is lies and liars. And, you know, I don't like that as a theme, but unfortunately, again, the New York Times put their willing ignorance on parade. And guess what? I'm stuck telling you the truth, which is what I normally do, but I didn't expect to have to do it because of the New York Times of all places. Why anybody buys that rag that's basically good enough for toilet paper? I don't know about what else today. I have no concept of why people buy that today. I understand that businessmen may buy it because of, again, the stock reports. What? But you don't need that anymore. So why buy that rag? I can't figure it out. So again, we're going to be talking about this story, but what I want to do is cover the truth first. That way you can see the deception. All right? If you learn the truth, it's easier to see the deception. This is extremely important. So I just want to get into it. Now, if you pick up this book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, at your Amazon, I'm hoping someday you can find it in your local bookstore. If you go to your local Barnes & Noble, they can order it for you. This book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, and you can find it again on my blog. You'll find this, the details, my research. You'll find everything. Why? Because my whole point is not to make a lot of cash. My whole point is to get the truth out. I'd like to make a lot of cash, but that's just not happening. The truth is more important than anything. Why people are okay with being deceived blows my mind. Because, again, if you're okay with being deceived, that makes you willingly ignorant in what we would call an ignoramus or willingly stupid, which, you know, my parents raised me to be someone that seeks out truth. I hope your parents did that for you. I just can't understand the idea of being willingly deceived. I mean, how would you ever know if you're being lied to? How would you ever, I mean, can you imagine living in that world? I personally can't. So let me just share. Here's this. I wrote this, again, the way I've written this is I cover the Islamic scriptures first. And I look at this as behavioral. I did this from an academic perspective. And what do I mean by that? I was an academic professional. I was a educator in a high school. And my goal in doing this was number one, to put out the truth and to look at it from an academic perspective, because when you can't find the truth, when you have to share something that's not what I would call a popular truth, you have to put it out in highly academic fashion in order for you not to get fired when you are an academic professional. Now, this is extremely important. So what's interesting is this book came out after I retired, and the reason why it came out after I retired is because of the last two chapters. It covers things. I talked about hatred last week, and then my last chapter in here is on jihad. But those things are so small compared to this first part, because the deception, the permissibility of lying, builds everything up. You can't have some of these things without the beginning of deception, the beginning of permissibility of lying. So let's get into this. One of the major components of trust in Western society is based on a belief that those you know and are friends with you will tell you the truth. We also expect that when a person is sworn into a court of law to tell the truth, we expect people under oath to tell nothing but the truth. This is a Western cultural norm. It's common sense not to expect criminals to tell the truth when lying can get them out of trouble. Sadly, in today's world, we expect politicians to lie to us. But this also is a statement that they are going against the norm. When politicians get caught lying, we call it scandalous. They get exposed for telling lies. But is this the same for people who believe in Islamic supremacy? Under Islam, there are five Arabic words that have to do with lying to non-Muslims. Five, get that, five. We need to start with the most basic understanding of this concept, which can be found in the Hadith. Bukhari gives several examples of what Muhammad said regarding war and lying. This is important to grasp, as Islam has no problem with the deceit of those that they are at war with. This means all those within lands classified as Dar al-Harb, for Dar al-Harb under this meaning means the land of constant warfare. The following are three examples from Bukhari about the legitimacy of deceit during war. This is not to say that deceit is of no importance during war. This lays a framework for understanding, especially considering that an area which is not actively engaged in war is considered at war with Islam for simply not being Islamic. So if you are living in a country that is not considered Islamic, those living within that country who are followers of Islam are allowed to deceive you. Again, like I said, there are five words that have to do with deceit, that have to do with lying. Five words, Arabic words, that this, you know, that's, they have five Arabic words to describe lying. It tells you the importance of lying. So this first one comes from Bukhari, volume 4, book 52, number 267, narrated by Abu Huraira. The prophet said, Khosru will be ruined, and there will be no Khosru after him, and Caesar will surely be ruined, and there will be no Caesar after him, and you will spend their treasures in Allah's cause. He called war is deceit. Okay. Bukhari, volume 4, book 52, number 268. Allah's apostle called war is deceit. That's volume 4, book 52, number 268. Next one. Volume 4, book 52, 269. Now, these are three in a row, and they're all saying what? War is deceit. Okay, got three of these in a row. They all are saying war is deceit. Again, I'm not disagreeing with this premise that war is deceit. Because the truth is, I mean, that the way you win a war partly is by deceit. So keep this in mind. If Islam claims that it is at war with all of Dar al-Harb, that means whatever country you live in that is not Islamic, they're at war with you. Muhammad justifies lying to non-Muslims based on this statement, that war is deceit. Creates an environment wherever Islam is not the majority and or Sharia is not the law of the land for deceit to be justified by every Muslim when interacting with non-Muslims. Extremely, extremely important. One of those words that gets mentioned is taqiyya. We'll cover it. Again, there are four other words. Taqiyya. This word means it's allowable to lie to non-Muslims in order to protect Islam or to save your life. This lying may be done to further Islam by deceiving others. This belief in lying to non-Muslims is based on Surah 3, chapter 3, verse 28. Let not believers take disbelievers as allies rather than believers. And whoever of you does that has nothing with Allah except when taking precautions against them in prudence. And Allah warns you of himself, and to Allah is the final destination. So this verse tells Muslims not to take non-Muslims as friends unless they are in the minority and have reason to fear them. In fact, under Islam, unlike Christianity, one is allowed to deny he is a Muslim. According to the Quran, chapter 16, verse 106, it says, whoever disbelieves in Allah after his belief, except for one who is forced to renounce his religion while his heart is secure in faith. But those who willingly open their breast to disbelief upon them is wrath from Allah, and for them is great punishment. According to the Bible, if you deny Christ before men, you will be denied by Jesus before his Father. According to Matthew 10:33, it says this. Again, this is Jesus saying it. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father, which is in heaven. Now, is this the same in Islam? Perhaps the strongest example of deceit allowed by Muhammad was deceit in order to kill Al-Ashra for him. This man had simply offended Muhammad with his words, nothing more. This is recorded in Bukhari. It's narrated by Jabir bin Abdullah. Allah's apostle said, who is willing to kill Kaban bin Al-Ashraf? Who has hurt Allah and his apostle? Thereupon, Muhammad bin Maslama got up saying, oh, Allah's apostle, would you like that I kill him? The prophet said, yes. Muhammad bin Maslama said, then allow me to say a false thing to deceive Kab. The prophet said, you may say it. Then Muhammad bin Maslama went to Cobb and said, that man, referring to Muhammad, demands sadaqah, which we would pronounce today zakat, from us. And he has troubled us. I have come to borrow something from you. On that, Cobb said, by Allah, you will get tired of him. Muhammad bin Maslama said, now, as we have followed him, we do not want to leave him unless and until we see how his end is going to be. Now, we want you to lend us a camel load or two of food. Some difference between narrators about a camel load or two. Cobb said, yes, I will lend you, but you should mortgage something to me. Muhammad bin Maslama and his companions said, what do you want? Cobb replied, mortgage your women to me. They said, how can we mortgage our women to you, and you are the most handsome of the Arabs? Cobb said, then mortgage your sons to me. They said, how can we mortgage our sons to you? Later, they would be abused by the people saying they so-and-so had been mortgaged for a camel load of food. That would cause us great disgrace. But we will mortgage our arms to you, their weapons. Muhammad bin Maslama and his companion promised Cobb that Muhammad would return to him. We came to Cobb at night, along with Cobb's foster brother, Abu Nayla. Cobb invited them to come to his fort, and then he went down to them. His wife asked him, where are you going at this time? Cobb replied, none but Muhammad bin Maslama and my foster brother, Abu Nayla, have come. His wife said, I hear a voice, as if dropping blood is from him. Cobb said, there are none but my brother Muhammad bin Maslama and my foster brother Abu Nayla. A generous man should respond to a call at night, even if it is invited to be killed. Muhammad bin Maslama went with the two men. Some narrators mention the men as Abu bin Jabir, Al-Rith bin Aus, and Abad bin Bashir. So Muhammad bin Maslama went in together with the two men and sailed to them. When Cobb comes, I will touch his hair and smell it. And when you see it, I have got a hold of his head. Strip him. I will let you smell his head. Cobb bin al-Ashraf came down to them, wrapped in his clothes and diffusing perfume. Muhammad bin Maslama said, I have never smelt a better scent than this. Cobb replied, I've got the best Arab woman who know how to use the high class of perfume. Muhammad bin Maslama requested Cobb, will you allow me to smell your head? Cobb said, yes. Muhammad smelt it and made his companion smell it as well. Then he requested Cobb again, will you let me smell your head? Cobb said, yes. When Muhammad got a strong hold of him, he said to his companions, get at him. So they killed him and went to the prophet and informed him. Abu Rafi was killed after Cobb bin al-Ashraf. This is volume 5, book 59, number 369. Keep thinking about this. Again, this is Bukhari. There are a lot of Islamic statements that lying is practiced by Shiites versus Sunnis. In my research, I found this to be untrue. There's a section of Sharia on this very topic. Sharia law under Sunni law has four schools of thought: Hanafi, Maliki, Shafi, and Hanafi. In Umda al-Salik, also known as Reliance of the Traveler, which is Sharia in English, this particular translation has statements of approval of accuracy in translation by groups of the Muslim Brotherhood and trusted sources in Sunni Islamic scholarship. So let's read R 8.0 to 8.2. It states, R 8.0, lying, R 8.1. Primary texts from the Quran and Sunnah that it is unlawful to lie are both numerous and intersubstantive, it being among the ugliest sins and most disgusting faults, because of the scholarly consensus of the community, the Ummah, that is prohibited, and the unanimity among of the primary textual evidence. There is little need to cite particular examples thereof. Our only concern here being to explain the exceptions to what is considered lying and apprise of the details. Permissible lying. The prophet said, he who settles disagreements between people to bring about good or says something commendable is not a liar. This much is related by both Bukhari and Muslim, with Muslim's version recording that Kulthum added, quote, I did not hear him permit untruth in anything. People say except for three things, war, settling disagreements, so you can deceive your brother, and a man talking with his wife, or she with him, so you can deceive your wife, you can deceive your friend, and you can deceive those when you're at war. This is permissible lying, R8.2. It's just kind of mind-blowing when you think about it. This is an explicit statement that lying is sometimes permissible. Again, I'm still reading from Sharia. This is explicit statement that lying is permissible for a given interest. Scholars having established criteria defining what types of it are lawful. The best analysis of it I have seen is by Imam Ghazali. If something is attainable through both telling the truth and lying, it is unlawful to accomplish it through lying because there is no need for it. When it is possible to achieve such an aim by lying but not by telling the truth, it is permissible to lie if attaining the goal is permissible. Again, comes from Reliance of the Traveler. Something that you got to buy this book. If you haven't bought it, go buy it. It's shocking stuff. When the purpose of lying is to circumvent someone who is preventing one from doing something permissible, and it is obligatory to lie if the goal is obligatory. That's something to consider. Okay, if you're at war, okay. When, for example, one is again, this is still part of Sharia. When, for example, one is concealing a Muslim from an oppressor who asked where he is, it is obligatory to lie about his being hidden. Or when a person deposits an article with one for safekeeping and an oppressor wanting to appropriate it inquires about it, it is obligatory to lie about having concealed it. For if one informs him about the article and then seizes it, one is financially liable to the owner to cover the article's cost. Now listen close. This continues. Whether the purpose is war, settling a disagreement, or gaining the sympathy of a victim legally entitled, are you catching this? So you're allowed to deceive the law. That means the police, lawyers. You are allowed to. I want to reread this because, again, settling. Whether a purpose is war, settling a disagreement, or gaining sympathy of a victim legally entitled to retaliate against one so that he will forbear to do so, it is not unlawful to lie when any of these aims can be attained through lying, but is religiously more precautionary in all such cases to employ words that give misleading impression, meaning to intend by one's words something that is literally true. In respect to which one is not lying, while the outward purport of the words deceives the hearer, though even if one does not have such an intention and merely lies without intending anything else, it is not unlawful in the above circumstances. This continues. Believe it or not, it continues. This is true of every expression connected with a legitimating desired end, whether one's own or another's. An example of a legitimate end of one's own is when an oppressor intending to appropriate one's property inquires about it, in which case one may deny it. Or if a ruler asked one about a wicked act one has committed, that it is solely between oneself and Allah. Oh, so you can lie about something you've done because it's between you and your God. Yeah. Something to think about. Some of these things you just got to sit there and go, wow, I mean, really.
If a ruler asks about a wicked act one has committed, so between oneself and Allah, in which case one is entitled to disclaim it, such as by saying, I didn't commit fornication, I didn't go drinking. Oh, we're talking about drinking alcohol and committing acts. That, again, these are, so as you're allowed to lie to your lawyers and to your government about crimes you have committed. So what do they think about, again, this is an Islamic country as well. Think about that. If they're allowed to do it in an Islamic country, what are they going to do when they come here? Or do you think you can expect them to tell the truth in the court of law? If they're told in Sharia, they can lie to their own. Wow. This goes on. An example of legitimating desired end of another is when one is asked about another's secret and one disacknowledges it, and so on. One should compare the bad consequences entailed by lying to those entailed by telling the truth. And if the consequences of telling the truth are more damaging, one is entitled to lie. What? Oh, again, permissible lying. Why do you trust someone when this is the rules of their faith, the law of their faith? Let's keep going. It says, whenever lying is permissible, if the factor which permits it is desired end of one's own, it is recommended not to lie. But when the factor that permits it is the desired end of another, it is not unlawful to infringe upon his rights. So not only can you deceive someone, you can infringe on their rights. Does this legalize rape? Think about all the things it would allow. And this is only written in the section on telling the truth. Think about that. Now, if this doesn't have you shocked, you're probably one of those few readers out there that stays informed. The question that has to be asked, is this not an irreconcilable difference with Western civilization? Can we even trust answers on an application to immigrate to a Western country? This social norm is an affront to Western civilization as a whole. Being that it is part of Sharia, it becomes documented doctrinal belief. Now, let's examine the concept of permissible lying with the Sharia concept of darura. According to the Oxford Islamic Studies online dictionary, dura means, in legal terminology, state of necessity on account of which one may omit doing something required by law or may do something illegal. The conditions allowing this license and the extent of the license are stipulated variously by different legal scholars. Most legal theorists agree that murder or other gross physical harm is never legitimate. But again, it said earlier, according to Darura, a Muslim may break the law, including giving false testimony, if a state of necessity exists. This tells us that Muslims can believe such a state exists, and it allows them to commit crimes such as perjury, filing a false police report, falsely accusing people of Islamophobia, and much more. According to Dr. Patrick Cicado, the term darura is used by many Islamic scholars to justify Muslim minority adaptation to Western norms in Western states. Compliance to Western legal systems and loyalty to Western states and governments. Sheikh Tantawi of Al-Azhar used this argument to justify Muslims in France obeying the new prohibition on wearing veils in public institutions, especially schools. Using darura to justify complying with the law of non-Muslim country also implies that they will as soon as possible refuse those laws when they are numerous enough to change them. Several examples exist of Muslims lying to non-Muslims. But what is not noticed enough is when they say one thing to the non-Muslim, then say the opposite to their Muslim friends. This concept of darura completely accepts this. Anjum Chowdhury, a leader of Al-Muhajirun, was on the BBC claiming he condemned the actions of the 9/11 terrorists shortly after the event. But not even a full 2 years later, he was exposed as supporting those actors of terror against the United States. A recording was made of Anjum Chowdhury calling the hijacking terrorists the Magnificent. 19. That's how many hijackers there were, and they killed thousands. He also said, "We are here today to talk about the Magnificent 19, those who 2 years ago split the world today into two camps, the camp of Islam and the camp of non-Islam, the Kuffar, those who revived again the obligation of jihad worldwide." I'm not disagreeing with that, that those 19 pretty much did that. And that should be scary when you think about the meaning. On September 12th of 2019, Lars Vinant's article on what was supposed to be a horrid example of Islamophobia was published with tonline.de. This article states that the picture, which is a picture of a toilet with Islamic scriptures torn up, it's a Quran torn into shreds and filling the toilet. It looks like some of the pieces were used as toilet paper. Now, this is an article that was supposed to expose Islam, supposed to be an Islamophobia. Now, let me just read a little bit more about it. The article states that the picture, which had been already been circulated, showing pictures of a Quran in a toilet, along with several other pages of the Quran shredded and used for toilet paper. The concept of Durer would say that this is okay to lie and not tell that a Muslim committed this act. Did the imam of the mosque know who committed this crime? We may never know that. The source for this photo is Ramazan Dogan, a Muslim who has run unsuccessfully to become a politician in Germany. This event in a mosque in Schleswig, Germany, actually took place much earlier on July 5th of 2019. It was claimed that this event was an Islamophobic hate crime, but an Iraqi migrant in France was caught and pled guilty to the crime. By the time the police had discovered that a Muslim had committed the supposed hate crime against the faith, pictures of this event had spread into Turkey, angering many. I have had encounters with Muslims openly lying to me and others. Dr. Muhammad Shafiq, a former professor at Nazareth College and the former imam of the Islamic Center of Rochester, New York. I've met him 3 times, and each time I've asked the same questions and received the same answers. He tells everyone Islam means peace. I ask him during the Q&A time, "What does Islam mean in Arabic?" He responds, "Submission." I then respond, "So you were lying to me when you told us it meant peace." The last time he went so far as to say that the Arabic word salam means the same thing as shalom in Hebrew. He did not know I'd taken 12 undergraduate credits in Hebrew. I got so angry at this lie, I couldn't speak. Instead, I wrote to the Board of Trustees at Nazareth College, where he had been a professor, and asked that he never be allowed to teach there. Again, since he was lying to the public, using his title as Professor Emeritus from Nazareth as part of his qualifications to speak. Submission is as far from peace as you can imagine. Lying to the general public while claiming to be an expert educator from an institution, whether retired or not, is academic malfeasance and grounds for dismissal or removal of credentials. One of my most recent encounters with Muslims came as a result of using Ubers to get to church. I rode with a Muslim driver who said he was an imam at his mosque. He told me Christians were deceived and they didn't have the truth about Jesus. I said to him, "So you want me to read about Jesus in the Quran? You do know the Quran states the Gospels are accurate, right?" He lied to me, saying that wasn't true. My claim that he lied is based on the Quran. The Quran says in Surah 3:3, "He, Allah, sent down on you the book with the truth, confirming that what is between his hands, and has sent down the Torah and the Injil, the gospel. That's what that's supposed to mean, right? And he will teach him the book and the wisdom and the Torah and the gospel. That's Surah 3:48. As stated previously, this misinformation of Christian and Jew and all non-Muslims is part of their doctrinal belief that they are at war with non-Muslims. People who live in lands and areas that are not Darul Islam can be deceived. The imam I spoke of above wasn't happy when I let him know I was aware that he considered this Darul Harb, and thought deception was justified to bring people to Islam. I told him when I wanted to know about Muhammad, I went to the Quran and the Sunnah, and I read the Sir al-Rasul. So why is it wrong to go to the Christian sources the Quran states are legitimate to learn about Jesus from? Really? I mean, think about it. You want to learn about Jesus? Why would you go someplace where he's not mentioned? Yeah, Jesus is not mentioned in the Quran. They have this guy called Isa, and if you look up who Isa, what that name really is, it's Esau. That's from the Old Testament. That's not Jesus. Sadly, this brings me to the problem that deceit creates when used too often. It messes with your logic center. When you have a deceit, when you are deceitful on a regular basis in order to justify your lies, you have to contradict the laws of logic. Many law enforcement personnel are experts at detecting deception. As shown above, deceit is such a ruling way of life under Islam that it is even used to trick people into becoming Muslims. Stories about this type of deceit are being used for what Muslims call dawah, are abundant. One of the most recent ones that came across my desk as I was writing this book was in AsianNews.it. They ran a story May 15th of 2019 about a 13-year-old boy being tricked on TV into converting to Islam. A few days earlier on May 11th, Nihat Hatapoluglu, a theologian and the rector of Gaziantep University of Science and Technology, went on a TV television show and introduced the boy, Arthur, as someone who wanted to become a Muslim with a statement he had the permission of the parents. This was a lie. This means that the boy stated the Shahada. There is nothing in it that says I now believe in Islam. According to Arthur's mother, a Syrian friend of his told him, come, we'll talk on live TV, they'll give us toys, and we'll eat with the stars. And my son went with him. He's a child. He made a mistake. But he did not convert, nor was he circumcised. Alina, the boy's mother, took the matter to court because this conversion violates the Lausanne Treaty, since forced conversions are a breach of its clauses on the rights of ethnic religious minorities. The absence of the parents and the absence of their consent made this a forced conversion. Muslims even lie to other Muslims when darura, a state of necessity, exists. On October 2, 2019, a retired general of Egypt, Fouad Fayoud, was on Channel 1 and told the people of Egypt that Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, had been a Jewish man. For those who are unaware, the Muslim Brotherhood is a banned entity in Egypt. It is labeled as a terrorist entity. Hassan al-Banna was a very charismatic teacher who began the movement to strengthen Islam in Egypt. To Fayoud, it is more important that Muslims be deceived and not join the Muslim Brotherhood than joining them and becoming an enemy of Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood had attempted to kill Egypt's second president, Gamal Nasser, on October 26th of 1954. It's thought that President Nasser was inspiring Egyptians to be proud of their heritage. However, the Muslim Brotherhood was against nationalism, but in favor of pride in being Muslim alone, which is why an assassin was sent. The religious permissive lying becomes a system of lying or deceit that is all too practiced and known. The problem that may be even deeper is what dangers does this systematic method of lying cause to local societies, to nations, and to the world in general? With systematic lying as an accepted social norm, why does anyone trust what is said to them by those who profess Islam? And exactly, XYZ, you are naming the things that are important to think about.
The U.S. federal judge took the oath of office on the Quran. There Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are sworn into office on the Quran. Can we trust? Again, right on target. Thank you. I asked William Bradford, a former DHS official, for a comment on lying and how it affects the logic center of the brain. Mr. Bradford, he's a noted lawyer who has been published on the rules of engagement and has served with the United States with honor as a Marine. His response was this. Anytime a person lies, he or she experiences cognitive dissonance because the brain cannot hold two completely contradictory propositions at once without turmoil. Behavioral detection of lies, optimally done by experienced interrogators and not by a polygrapher, can reveal certain physical manifestations of cognitive dissonance. Well, as a researcher, this response set off all sorts of bells and whistles. Islam, as a religion, teaches duality as a religious concept. Their God, Allah, says one thing, then later contradicts it, which is truth becomes a problem. Muslims address contradictions in the Quran through the process of abrogation. Basically, that which was said last canon does negate that which was said previously. The Quran itself, it is inconsistent and has contradictions. For this reason, abrogation existed as stated in the Quran. The Quran even says it. So which part of it? You have to think. You have to actually figure out which part was said last. And if you don't know, you don't know what part is truthful. So let me just read this. Quran, chapter 2, 106. It says, we do not abrogate a verse or cause to be forgotten. We bring forth one better than it or similar to it. Do you not know that Allah is over all things competent? So their God has to cover up the things he said that were. Are you saying, wait, is this God saying he has to change things because he said something wrong? Or he deceived people? Go on. Quran 16:101. And when we substitute a verse in place of a verse, and Allah is most knowing of what he sends down, they say, you, O Muhammad, are but an inventor of lies. But most of them do not know. Again, Quran 16:101. I'm not making this up. I'm getting it straight from the Quran, people. Holding to opposing beliefs by giving priority to one over the other is another method of deception. Unless you know the correct chronological order of the Quran, you can't know which passages supersede others. This also creates deception for many Muslims who do read the Quran, simply because they may be unaware of its chronological order. Important. Very, very important. If you consider the only things that are really, really important are the things that were said last. It almost makes you think you should just read what was said last. You might be just reading Surah 9 and a few others. Something to think about. If you don't know the chronology, guess what? The Quran, this is a big difficulty, is not written in chronological order. So in that respect, it is confusing. Keep listening. A culture of holding two opposing positions is ingrained in Islam. They teach that the latter teaching is true, allowing the earlier teaching to be easily dismissed. Children who became aware of the doctrine of Islam that allows contradictions to stand create a routine of teaching Muslims to accept that their God allows them to hold two opposing positions at one time. This is incredibly important. Because teaching this at a young age allows children to become masters of deception. Now, this is something that really needs to be examined when you're talking about accepting people from Islamic countries into this. When you're interviewing, you're going to have difficulties discovering what is true. Because they are allowed to hold this thing, and they've been doing it since childhood. Again, with all this lying being permissible,
and the planned and expected deceiving of non-Muslims. Should non-Muslim societies be open to receiving those who plan to deceive them? This concept of deceit and lying is doctrinal to Muslims. It is part of their culture, so much so that Daruda even allows them to lie to other Muslims, as I've already shown. What do you think? Is this an irreconcilable difference between cultural norms of Islam and the rest of the world? I'm not just saying Western civilization. The entire rest of the world. Can you trust? This is where I sit here and I go, wow. I mean, this is a problem. This is a huge problem. When you think about it, if you can't trust someone, what are you left with? Now, I want to talk about an article that got me into this. Now, I found this article in honestreporting.com. Now, honestreporting.com is an incredibly good, one of these incredibly good sources, which I recommend to everybody. So I'm going to post this link into the YouTube link, and hopefully it'll get broadcast every place I can broadcast it. But this link should be important because I think people need to go here. Now I'm going to go here and start talking about this. I like this article, and I give Rachel O'Donohue a lot of kudos for her work. She did an excellent job on this article. New York Times publishes glowing profile on notorious anti-Israel terror apologist. Now, this came out yesterday. And as I saw this, I knew immediately what I was going to talk about today. I had something else planned, but this just hit me as something I can't be quiet about. I mean, once you start thinking about these things, Honest Reporting, this article starts, Honest Reporting recently exposed media pundit and provocateur Rafat Al-Alir as a proud Israel hater. He compared Israel to Nazi Germany more than 100 times, promoted modern-day blood libels, and repeatedly disseminated falsehoods about the Jewish state. Yet the New York Times is evidently unrepentant about having given a platform to Al-Arir during May's Hamas-initiated conflict against Israel, as the publication has now produced a glowing feature about him that whitewashes his anti-Semitism. The November 16th article by Patrick Kingsley, In Gaza, a contentious Palestinian professor calmly teaches Israeli poetry, defies belief with its gushing deceptions of Al-Arir and his job teaching university students, observing that Al-Arir has introduced his class to the work of an Israeli poet. Kingsley writes, now listen closely to this part. Here was an appreciation, this again, this is the New York Times. Here was an appreciation of one of Israel's best-loved poets from a Palestinian professor at a university co-founded by the former leader of Hamas. The militant group that runs the Gaza government does not recognize Israel and was responsible for dozens of suicide attacks on Israelis. Experts say the study of Israeli poetry in Palestinian college is rare, though not unheard of. What Mr. Al-Arir admired about the poem, Jerusalem, he told his students, was that it blurred divisions between Israelis and Palestinians and implied that Jerusalem can be a place where we all come together, regardless of religion and faith. Al-Arir may, this is where O'Donohue comes back and comments. She writes, while Arir may have paid lip service to lofty ideas about peaceful coexistence under the gaze of Kingsley, the facts speak for themselves. Al-Arir has repeatedly used his social media platform to spew hatred about Israel. including his assertion that the Jewish state is Nazi Germany on steroids, and by comparing Zionism to Hitler's Germany as two cheeks of the same dirty bleep. Kingsley seems to have missed all this. Let me just read one of a few of his, a few of Rafat's, Rafat is how he writes it, his tweets. Hitler is as peaceful as any Israeli leader. Right? Is this the kind of guy that you're going to trust and you really want to put his work in your newspaper? This is the stuff that I sit there and go, how could you not see this? I sit here sometimes and I see these things and I just, how about this one? Let's take a quick look at what recently happened in the UK. You've heard about the Liverpool jihadi who had a pre-explosion. He exploded his bomb before its time. I'm personally thankful for that. I say that's a blessing from God above. I'm not saying I'm glad the man's dead. Everybody's life is important. But I'd rather he die than everybody else be taken with him. I like Robert Spencer's take on this. He said this, Christianity has no tradition of suicide bombing. Actually, this might be Christine. To double check in a minute. Christianity has no tradition of suicide bombing. There is no equivalent in Christian tradition to Quran 9:111, which promises paradise to those who kill and are killed for Allah. Maybe Ahmad Jamal al-Suyami converted to Christianity and then returned to Islam, turning to jihad to make up for his sin of apostasy. Another possibility is in January 2016, the Islamic State issued a manual entitled Safety and Security Guidelines for Lone Wolf Mujahideen. It told jihadis in the West to pretend to be Christians and stated, again, quote, it is permissible for you to wear a necklace showing a Christian cross. As you know, Christians or even atheist Westerners with Christian background wear crosses on their necklaces. So what was he saying? Okay, we're talking about permissibility of lying. Think about this. What was the purpose? Well, let's go a little farther. Robert Spencer did an article in PJ Media. Again, they were saying this guy, they're actually saying he was a Christian. And you know, if you understand that even as ISIS said, it's permissible for you to lie. Deception, again, in wartime, again, they consider everybody else at war with them. This sounds cruel and inhumane, and, you know, it's almost unbelievable, but that is the way things are. It's just frustrating and to no end that we have to be so cautious and we can't trust. But can you trust someone who believes lying is something good? This is where you run into trouble. So what happened? What am I talking about? On this day, a taxi cab pulled up in front of the Liverpool Women's Hospital and exploded into flames. Moments later, the taxi driver, David Perry, who had run out of the car, explained that he had noticed the passenger, who turned out to be an Iraqi migrant named Ahmad Jamil al-Suyamin, was wearing an explosive belt. So he locked the cab, whereupon Suyamin exploded the bomb inside it. Oh. A pre-explosion. He didn't get to where he wanted to go. Thank you to that taxi cab driver. This would have been an unfortunate standard story of jihad terrorism, writes Robert Spencer, was it not for a strange detail. Suyamin, again, creatively converted to Christianity. What was his purpose? Well, here's the catch, people. If you came during a certain time period into England, UK, if you came there and you said, oh, I'm a Christian, I'll be killed if I go back home. Well, they would give you, refugee status. Oh, so Now you're not just a migrant that's there illegally. You're safe. Now, this church that he's supposed to have converted at is the very one he tried to bomb. Oh, yeah, people don't get that. See, he wasn't intending to go to the hospital and bomb it. He was intending to go to that church. How do we know this? Because of documents found in his apartment. Oh, so his goal was to blow up a church. Are you telling me that Christians would do that? And that's what makes this really silly. And again, it forces people to start to look at this insanity. Can you trust someone whose doctrine, whose religious doctrine tells them to deceive you? The obvious answer should be absolutely not. There is so much out there. It's just shocking. It is just shocking. XYZ said, 5 D's of Dawa: deceive, deny, distract, distrust, destroy. Well said. Thank you. Now, fellow New Yorkers out there, what do you think happened at 9/11? Think about that. 19 people that one of their own, who was lauded a short time later, 2 years later, when he was allowed to be more open about his beliefs, called the Magnificent 19. Deception. That is also considered a level 2 form of jihad. Level 2. It's considered word jihad. This is scary, scary stuff. It falls into that. Can you trust? You know, one of the stories I haven't yet shared is my daughter came to me when she was in high school, and she said to me, she was talking about jihad, and you know, that she said Muslims don't really believe all that. I said, well, it doesn't matter whether they believe it or not. It's part of their faith. You know, and I showed her what I was talking about. And her friend in school, she thought was a friend, was lying. And she couldn't understand he was lying. And at that point, I had chosen not to learn enough. And I'm very not happy with myself when I think back. And so she chose to believe this friend. Yeah, it's... chose to believe her friend who should know more about his faith. Unfortunately, my favorite thing has been for a long, long time is the study of apologetics. And once I get into something and I bite into it, I get into it more than most people. Religious structure, faith structures have been something I've enjoyed looking at for a long, long time. So understanding this and going at it from different directions, even an academic perspective, is something I have been doing for quite a long time. I don't want to think about how long when I think about how old I am at this point. I do want to get into a few other topics, and I'll get back into what's happening in more on some of the evils of Islam. While I'm here, there was a lot that happened this week in the United States. One of the things that came out, the New York Post did an article on the FBI creating a threat to tag and track alleged harassment of educators. So that's actually important to think about, because the FBI is now deciding that if you go to a Board of Education meeting and you disagree with the board, you should be tracked. How would you think about that? So the FBI now considers their responsibility in getting into local politics. There isn't anything more local than a school board meeting. So the FBI thinks they have a right to investigate you for disagreeing with the Board of Education? This is almost like the expression of the of the concept of secret police. Again, the FBI admitted to creating threat to track menacing statements by parents. I wouldn't have believed this could ever be done. A couple years ago, I would have sat there and laughed. That's never happened. Never. It'll never happen. No. And guess what? I would be wrong. Some of these things, again, you sit there and you go, why? How is this even possible? But that is the reality. Let's go into one other thing here. High school sports. This one, I want to talk about just as soon as I'm going to read this article. And then I'm going to tell you my own personal thoughts, and I want you to think about them. This comes by MRCTV. I love MRCTV. If you have, again, for places, if you have extra cash flowing around, I always recommend buying my books. That's a way to support me. MRCTV, Jihad Watch. There are a number of organizations out there that I recommend donating to. Let me share this article by Gabriel Hayes. He writes, students suspended from high school sports for stating there are only two genders. Okay. Now, here's the truth here. If a teacher tells a lie to students, they can be dismissed for violating the code of ethics. That's to your contract. Okay. Let me read this article now. American, in 2021, a lovely smiling place where you can get suspended from school sports for saying there are only two genders. As reported by the New York Post, a male student from the Exeter High School in New Hampshire was suspended for playing in a high school football game last September for violating the school's PC speech codes. And now he's suing the school for violating his First Amendment rights. Good for him! In layman's terms, he basically told another student that there are only two genders. They had a private argument over text about it. Then he got suspended from school sports. And because that's wildly unfair and tyrannical, the student is getting the law involved. Yes, it is. It was a private conversation. Oh, because the student got his feelings hurt, he called the school and... Okay. The Post detailed the chain of events, which start with a male getting into a discussion on gender on a school bus with his friends. According to the boy's lawsuit, he and several friends were conversing about perceived difficulty in using plural pronouns for an individual in Spanish, as the language has masculine and feminine plurals. The boy's account claims that female student overheard the conversation and decided to interject that there were more than two genders. The male shot back, "No, there isn't. There's only two genders." Okay. So here's the thing. You go into a medical place and you write down you feel female. You know what they're going to write in their notes? Biologically male, if you're a male. If you're female, you go in and you tell them you feel male, they're going to write down in their notes biologically male. Why? So let's say you need some actual, you have some pain in your stomach. They actually need to know which gender you are to know how to best medically treat you. So whether they allow you to say you're one thing or another has nothing to do with the fact that you are one thing or another. You do not get to choose your gender. You do not. Again, there are those who will actually go through with it and cut off things and add things. But the truth is, you are only one. In order for medical professionals to correctly diagnose and treat you, that's the reality. How do I know this? I'm going to leave that quiet because that's another discussion for another day. All right, let's keep going. Some of these things I just sit here and I kind of laugh when I think about it. If you've been listening to the issues with Kyle Rittenhouse, I have a couple things to share. One of them I think is extremely important and one of the reasons why we cannot trust places like the New York Times, places like MSNBC. Now, this article I missed. I apologize for missing it. I'm really upset when I say missed it. I didn't miss it last week, but I missed it reading it. This one just blew my mind. MSNBC banned from Kyle Rittenhouse trial after producer accused of following jurors. This was in the New York Post. So they have a reporter, producer, following a bus that drops off and just takes jurors to a safer place, whether it's to their houses, I don't know. Bus that was doing this. And a producer was trying to take pictures of all this. What was his intent? So he got banned by this. We're supposed to be able to protect the jury. It's supposed to be an high honor to serve on a jury. And when you have commie stations like MSNBC and Communist News Network and a few others trying to destroy that, yeah. Some of these things you just sit there and go, oh my gosh, it's just insane. Let's see. Another one out there. I want to mention, we're going to start getting into a few other things that'll just blow your mind. Biden's banking chief nominee. This one, I saw this and I just started laughing. Today I have seen a lot of things. Now, if you're a banking chief, you would think that you wouldn't have caused any difficulties in your life that would keep you in trouble or put you in the limelight, because your Senate hearing is going to reveal all that. So why would you nominate someone who has been caught shoplifting several hundred dollars worth of material? Why would you do that? Better yet, why would you nominate someone whose background reveals that she should never, ever, ever, ever be in a political office in the United States? And you're going to hear why. Robert Spencer did this outstanding article on the 13th. The title is Biden's Banking Chief Nominee Wants to Eliminate Your Private Bank Account. Now, I have been reading tons and tons of articles over the years that this is coming down the road. For the last 20 years, I've been reading stuff on this. You know, I've been dismissing it, thinking it's crazy. Listen to this. This is just kind of mind-numbing. This you can find in PJ Media. On the heels of video surfacing, showing her calling for the bankrupting of the oil, gas, and coal industries, another damning statement has come to light from Saul Omarva, old Joe Biden's Soviet-born nominee for comptroller of the currency. Yes, you heard that right. Comptroller of the currency. At this point, it's absolutely certain. If there was any doubt up to now, Saul Omarova is straight up Marxist-Leninist. Should a Marxist really be put in charge of regulating America's banks? And what does it say about Biden's handlers that they would nominate her for such a position? Again, Joe Biden, if you can't see it, he has dementia. So you know he's not the one really coming up with it. He might believe he has, because that's what happens when you have dementia. In the new video, Omarva says, imagine what would it be like if instead of being just a public option for deposit or bank, this would be actually a full transition. Full transition to what? Marxism. Quote, in other words, there'll be no more private bank deposit accounts. And all that deposit accounts will be held directly at the Fed. And there are very interesting implications from that experiment. For example, with much more direct, provocative tools, monetary policy like helicopter money, which is considered radical money, because economists really don't know how to manage the issue. Really? Getting rid of all the private banks? How long before they decide what you can have and not have? who's allowed to be paid and who's not. And if they're going to start using racism as a result, who will be the ones getting paid and not getting paid? Think about that. Is that something you would trust in the hands of the government, especially with their big push? I also found something that I consider incredibly shocking, and of all places, I did not expect to find this. I like Mark Deese. I think his work is outstanding. And I saw this one piece he did today, and I have to share it. Racist healthcare. You know, I've heard, even myself included, have been denied healthcare because I won't vax. And I have no problem telling people I won't vax. Why? Because I consider it a deadly option. Why do I say it's deadly? The CDC says VAERS data is 1% of reality. That's what they say. I'm not making this up. You can read it on the CDC site. Okay. VAERS data tells you today that 18,000 have died of the vaccine. 18,000 cases. It's over 18,000 cases reported killed by the vaccine. 1%. Add two zeros, people. What's that number? That's a million. It's almost 2 million. So does that mean that the vaccine has killed more than... You do the math, people. Okay. You do the math. Let me share this piece by Mark Deese. I just have to start it in Blog Talk. Just a second. You know, when I see some of this stuff, I sit there and go, why? Again, some of these things it's just so shocking you don't know what to do. Racist healthcare, and I better find it and see it didn't go away. Please don't go away. The joy of putting things in, and sometimes they're not where you want them. And there's Hawthorne. Trying to get this up. Sorry about this. Just a second. And I don't see it. So forgive me, those people on Blog Talk Radio. You're probably not going to hear anything, and I apologize. You may want to come to the YouTube where I'm playing this on StreamYard. I did put it up. I'm just going to double check what I labeled it. Just a second. And I do agree. I do agree with you, XYZ. I cannot understand why they are arresting someone. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let me share this. This is just a mind blower.
Denied medical service because of my race, but.
Yeah. So what I do, I go in and make sure the woman is
criteria. Okay.
Yeah. The criteria
that
you fit, you're 65. And your health and your health. So research shows you're going to fight off COVID.
No, I guess not.
We posted that video on Twitter. People were understandably shocked. Others simply couldn't believe that the anti-whiteism in America had reached such a level. And so someone decided to call the Justice Department and ask them straight up if they are denying people medical treatment for COVID.
Is it true that you're not giving monoclonal antibody infusions to white people?
No, that's not true at all.
Right. So a friend of mine was down there trying to get a monoclonal antibody infusion, and he was refused because he was not Hispanic or African American. They told him that they were only...
Well, there's... Okay, so there's eligibility criteria that we go by, and African-American and Hispanic are high-risk ethnicity groups, so that would be a qualifier, but that doesn't mean that we don't give it to white people. So it's for, we're prioritizing more vulnerable populations. Medical condition, anyone who has an underlying medical condition can get it. Along with that, people with a BMI of 25 or higher, people 5 years of age or up, or high-risk ethnicity groups can get it.
So if you are a healthy, in-state patient, and you show up, we're not going to get
based on the criteria that we go by right now, that is correct.
Thank you.
So far, it's already been at least 4 days since this incident has occurred. Nobody is reporting on this. It's just a crazy info war.
So some of these things you hear, I like I say, I like Mark Deese. I think his work is outstanding. But I never, ever in this country, at least from the time I've been around, expected to hear of healthcare being racist. I never thought I'd hear about teachers being required to teach racist things. Required. Yes, I am telling the truth. Required. Even though New York State teachers are now telling people, now telling other teachers, oh, we never required critical race theory. Okay. Then they require diversity, inclusion, and equity. And equity was usually listed last. And if you spell that out, D-I-E, that's die. So they had to rearrange the words. They now call it diversity, equity, and inclusion. Oh, because yes. Yes, if you put them in the order that they started telling you, you get DIE, not DEI. But again, is the reality of where we're at. I did want to share one more thing on that before I get into world more stuff that's happening around the world. In case you missed it this week, James O'Keefe and Project Veritas were invaded last week. Illegally, as far as I can see, unconstitutionally, the FBI did something in exchange for the FBI did something in exchange for the New York Times. That's how I see this. I see that they have a partnership. See, the New York Times is being in trouble with the law because they got caught lying about Project Veritas.
And guess what? The federal government turned around and investigated Project Veritas. Again, for what? It makes no sense. Because first of all, I mean, unless they have proof that they were involved in a theft. Yeah. So I want to play this because Nathaniel Hawthorne, Congressman Madison Hawthorne, went before Congress. And I do want to start this one in, I do have it in Blog Talk, so I don't know why the other one wasn't there, but let me just pull this up again. Here we go.
Madam Speaker, the halls of this hallowed republic have become darkened with the smut and filth of corrupted justice. Imagine a pre-dawn raid, waking from a dead sleep in sheer terror to men with guns, screaming, searching furiously for damning evidence against their authoritarian master. This horrifying vision is not pulled from the pages of some graphic novel. This was last week's headline. A dedicated group of whistleblowing journalists, including James O'Keefe, faced illegal raids by the FBI to confiscate personal cell phones and crucial documents that incriminate tyrant Joe Biden. Madam Speaker, why do you sit in silence while the White House's secret police round up dissenters? Why do you sit in silence while diligent journalists face harassment at the hands of left-wing enforcers? There is no greater tyranny than that which is perpetrated under the shield of the law and in the name of justice. The flag of freedom lies in tatters when liberty is crushed beneath the heavy hand of totalitarian regime. Hear my message loud and clear. The American people will raise the flag of freedom, and we'll fly high again very soon.
People, this, I think the words of Madison Hawthorne should be repeated all over the world. He is exactly right. And he's quoting some incredibly great people. And I just, I look at that and I'm like, wow, why can't we get this truth out? I thought his words were perfect, well-timed, and well-said. So had to share that today. But let's talk about Europe. I want to go over there. I'm skipping Canada today, but let me share this one. Convicted terrorist with links to Paris attack mastermind arrested at the Bulgarian border. Now, if you're paying attention to the news this week, there are some serious issues with Bulgaria and with the Hijra. The Hijra does go through Bulgaria a lot. What am I talking about, Hijra? Hijra is the Muslim migration to a non-Muslim land for the purpose of jihad. Unless the Hijra, you know, the only permissible reason for going to a non-Muslim land, again, if you want to pick up my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, that first chapter is on migration. Pick it up. You will be shocked, appalled, or you can go to paulsutliff.com and read the section on the Hijra. You can also go to paulsutliff.blogspot.com and read on that. This stuff blows people's minds. Interestingly, it is one of the most read sections on my blogs. I think that is entirely because it's well-researched and documented. That's what I try to do my best to get the research out, and I'm not just listening to one source or two sources. I'm keeping my mind open and brain open to finding as many sources as I can on materials. All right, so let's get back to this. Convicted terrorist with links to Paris attacks mastermind arrested at Bulgarian border. This is by Euronews. A man convicted of terrorism in Belgium has been arrested trying to enter Bulgaria, authorities have said. The suspect was detained on Wednesday during a special operation involving border police, the Bulgarian prosecutor's office said in a statement. The man is wanted in connection with a 20-year prison sentence for terrorism in another European country. Prosecutors also said the suspect had been given a prison sentence of 9 years and 5 months in Turkey on terrorism charges. So he's, we're up to 29 years worth of charges, right? Bulgarian media have identified this man at the Yassine as Yassine Lakiri, who allegedly has ties to Abdelhamad Aboud, the mastermind of the November 2015 attacks in Paris.
A source close to the investigation affirmed to AFP that the man arrested in Bulgaria was Lakhiri. In 2015, he was sentenced in absentia by a Brussels court and trial in an alleged Islamist recruitment network. Meanwhile, the Belgian federal prosecutor's office said they were preparing an extradition order. Paris is preparing to mark the sixth anniversary of the terror attacks that killed 130 people. 130 people. This is why terrorism should never be a crime. 20 years, 9 years, what did he do? He's responsible for the murder. The charge should be murder. This is why I disagree with the crime called terrorism, because most of what these people get are 20 years. Really? Think you're going to change the idea, the ideals of a person after 20 years? We're talking about religious ideals, religious views. Let's go to the UK. Again, we're talking, we have to keep in mind that today's theme has to do with deception. I want you to pay real close attention to this article. It came from the Guardian. A man who wore a Hamas t-shirt in Golders Green admits terrorism offenses. Listen closely. Faris al-Jayousi wore shirts supporting banned Palestinian groups in areas of London with large Jewish population. A man who wore t-shirts supporting banned Palestinian groups in Golders Green has admitted terrorism offenses. Faris al-Jayousi, 34, pled guilty to 4 counts of wearing an article supporting a proscribed organization at Westminster Magistrates Court on Friday. The charges relate to him wearing T-shirts supporting the Izz ad-Din al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Both groups are proscribed as terror organizations in the UK. 3 of these charges relate to Jayousi wearing the garment in Golden Green, an area of North London, which is a large Jewish population, on 8th and 9th of June this year. Okay. Let me get down to it. This guy pled guilty, and then they let him go home, stating that he's been diagnosed with autism. Really? Does autism negate, I mean, if they're saying he hadn't, didn't have a mental ability to decide what he was wearing, who gave him those shirts? And did his parents think it was okay for him to wear those shirts? I don't care if he's 34. I understand that there are people who are incapacitated as adults. But again, who is watching this person? Who's responsible for this person? Should his parents face these charges? Absolutely. Absolutely. What's going on? Why is this stuff not being discussed? Oh, well, let him go because he has autism. Really, if you're saying that, if he was autistic and he couldn't know any better, again, who gave this stuff to him? Who's supervising this man if he can't be responsible? These are things to think about, people. You're getting a pass because of this? Oh, this gets better. This gets better. I saw this one, and I just, this next one, this again is in the UK. This one just, it may make most women want to vomit. A Sky employee, 44, this comes from the Daily Mail, who won an unfair dismissal case, lost his bid to get his job back after he said two young girls wearing short skirts was an open invitation to get raped. So this, we would call, in the United States, we would call this man a clerk, a retail clerk. Raja Minhas, 44, had sought his old job back at a remedy hearing. He was dismissed for comments about teens as they walked past. Now, teenagers, he's 44. He's talking about teenagers wearing shorts. Something is off here, maybe in his head. Did that make him mentally incompetent? No. Does that make him a follower of Muhammad? Well, again, if you, this is where I'm saying to pick up my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, because it gives you a little bit more. One of the things in here, let me just read a couple of chapters on this topic. Just read some of the titles of the chapters. Are women considered less than equals in Islamic social norms? Are Muslim women required to wear the hijab? Do Islamic social norms make men see women as intellectual equals or sexual objects of pleasure? Is child marriage permissible? Is it an Islamic social norm requiring female genitalia mutilation? Is it an Islamic social norm that non-Muslim women are sexual prey for any Muslim man? Think about that. All right, let's get back to this article. A Sky employee who was dismissed after telling a colleague two young girls wearing short skirts were raped, it would be their own fault, has lost his bid to get his job back. Retail advisor Raja Minhas has sought his job back as a remedy hearing after being dismissed for comments about teenagers as they walked past his Sky stand in a shopping center in Blackburn, Lancashire. A colleague reported the 44-year-old boss to bosses, claiming he told her girls in general who wear skirts like that can get raped. It's their own fault, the hearing was told. The alleged comments sparked a heated row with his fellow employees. Mia Clementis, who said she would rethink what she had, what she would wear when she worked with him again. Willie, would you trust yourself around this man if you were near him, if you were a female? Would you trust that he wouldn't rape you if you wore a short skirt? Tribunal heard the employees were working at the shopping center to drum up business for Sky Products in June of 2019. Later this year, a tribunal judge ruled the dismissal was unfair. Said he would be seeking his old job back. Really, was it unfair to protect the employees as well as the patrons? Guess what? He's not getting his job back. He lost. But can you imagine being the person that had to work with him as a female after knowing that? Some of these things are just so shocking. It should set you on fire here. But again, what he's saying, the truth of the matter is what he's saying is permissible under Islamic social norms. That's why I registered my book as social psychology. I didn't register it as terrorism. I didn't register it as Islam. I put it under the social psychology Why? Because I looked at this academically. So when you want to look at social psychology, again, I looked at social norms. That's social psychology, people. And who better to write on social psychology than a person who's worked with teenagers for over 20 years? So think about it. All right, let's get into this next article from Italy. This will blow your mind also. One of the things I do recommend, when I recommend articles to you, a lot of times I get them in different languages. You may not see them in your language. So what I do tell people is you go to translate after, you get these articles in different languages and you put them in. It's like it's Italian. This one I'm going to put out through StreamYard. It is this is written in Italian, but when I look at it and I use translate.google, I'm not saying I get the best translation. What I'm saying is I get a translation that's in English that I can read. So this is something I recommend. I love getting that. I mean, I can read foreign newspapers because of this. I can read foreign news sources because of this. I might not like Google, but this is one of the things I do like. So this article is entitled Ostia. Beaten because she is not wearing a burqa. The condemnation of politics, and thus religious fanaticism. Listen closely, people. This is from Italy. And this happened November 15th, 3 days ago. Incidents such as that of Ostia
must be immediately reported, and the victims must feel secure in the total support of the state. That's kind of scary when you think about it, the wording. Well, it's not here in the United States we're talking about. Ostia. She was beaten by her family because she refused to wear the burqa. And for this reason, a 14-year-old living with her family in Ostia decided to denounce the continuous attacks she suffered because she did not want to conform to Islamic culture. Aggressions that would not only involve the brother, but also the mother. And politics, local and national, took sides in defense of the young woman, condemning what happened on the Roman coast. The shameful assault suffered in Ostia by a teenager, originally from Bangladesh, by her mother and brother because she refused to wear the burqa and follow the precepts of Islam, with greater intensity, is unacceptable and must be strongly condemned. The comment of the senator of the League, William Davis, with such dramatic episodes are intolerable for a democracy like ours, which in its founding law, the Constitution, provides for respect for diversity, different opinions, and religious choice. Oh, but in Islam, that's not allowed, religious choice. Think about that. Again, you want to find more, please go. If you don't know enough about what I'm talking about, I suggest if you have questions about the religious choice issue, go back and listen to last week's show, the live show. Go back and listen to that. You'll learn about Islam and hate, and that pretty much addresses this. Let's continue. This article states that, unfortunately, it's a current issue in which we must look the other, we must not look the other way. On the contrary, we need to do serious awareness-raising work. Laws and human dignity must be respected by everyone. Okay, who are we talking about in particular? We're talking about Muslims respecting the laws of the country. What are we talking about? What kind of laws? We're talking about laws that say you have a right to think the way you want to think. You have a right to choose which faith structure you want to follow. But in Islam, again, if that's not permissible, you're in trouble. Why? Because you're disagreeing with the precepts of Islam. Again, that gives them reason to be at war. Oh. Now, this stuff I'm sharing, again, if you'd like, you want to support my work, I do recommend buying the book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. And the big thing I need from readers is reviews. So shockingly, this book has been out almost a year and has no reviews. So I'm looking for people to do reviews. I don't care who you are. I just want an honest review. It's all I'm asking for. Now, I'm getting near the end of the show, believe it or not. And this one, I'm going to go back. This article, I cannot go by without laughing. If you are familiar, last week's show, I talked about Biden's incredibly stupid appointment of a man that's supposed to be talking about religious freedom and persecution, how his ambassador that has to do with religious freedom will not help Christians or Jews or anybody but Muslims. And we can see that this week with Anthony Blinken's changes that he has created. I'm just going to read to you the press statement that came out yesterday on the religious freedom designations. I'm just going to read you from the government site. It states, the United States will not waver in its commitment to advocate for freedom of religion or belief for all and in every country. In far too many places around the world, we continue to see governments harass, arrest, threaten, jail, and kill individuals simply for seeking to live their lives in accordance with their beliefs. The administration is committed to supporting every individual's right to freedom of religion or belief, including by confronting and combating violators and abusers of this human right. Each year, the Secretary of State has a responsibility to identify governments and non-state actors who, because of their religious freedom violations, merit designation under the International Religious Freedom Act. Blinken says, I am designating Burma, the People's Republic of China, Eritrea, Iran, the DPRK, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan as countries of particular concern for having engaged in tolerated
or engaged in or tolerated systemic, ongoing, egregious violations of religious freedom. I am also placing Algeria, Comoros, Cuba, Nicaragua on a special watch list for governments that have engaged in or tolerated severe violations of religious freedom. Finally, I'm designating Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Hayat Tahrir, al-Sham, the Houthis, ISIS, ISIS Greater Sahara, ISIS West Africa, Jamaat Nasir al-Islam, Muslim, and the Taliban as entities of particular concern. Did you hear that? Particular concern. Okay, so who's in charge of Afghanistan? The Taliban. Okay, go back. Did he list Afghanistan in his original statement? No. How could you miss that? So who's getting protected here that we thought was going to happen? They were protecting Islam. Again. So with that said, the Biden regime, which came out swinging for jihad when it started running for office, is now protecting Islam. Let's pay attention to how Yahoo covered this. Now, this kind of made me laugh. Let me just read the headline from Yahoo. U.S. removes Nigeria from religious freedom list. Are we talking about religious freedom or religious persecution? Talk about religious persecution. So, under this belief structure of Biden, Nigeria was removed from the list of extreme concern. Remember, where were the girls taken from? What was Nigeria? Those girls, there's 200 or 300 girls that were stolen, kidnapped, sold as sex slaves, sold as wives, given away as slaves. Yeah, we know. But that's okay with Biden. Yeah, it's okay with Biden. Let me keep going here. This just, let's talk about another thing that happened in Nigeria. And some of these things, you just sit here and go, why, how is this even possible? And Nigeria, another thing that happened in Nigeria this past week. Actually, this is a month old when I picked it up off of, Robert Spencer's Jihad Watch site this week, but it happened this October. Tells you how much Nigeria is now infiltrated by Islam. Nigeria's accountant general bought a bride who is 45 years younger. Bought a bride. It was a forced marriage. Now, again, let's just guess at how old she is. I'm going to tell you his age. Again, this is a Nigeria paper, National Daily Newspaper. And this came out October 5th of 2021. They're saying he is 45 years older. He's 61 years old. She is 16 years old. It's his fifth wife. Do you buy brides? I want you to think about this. Are the parents happy? Is she happy? Well, the family seems to be kicking against the marriage, but nothing changes. This is a man with political clout. Is this permissible under Islam? Yes. Keep thinking, people. 45, he's in his 60s. He's in his mid to late 60s. And he married a 16-year-old. Maybe he was hoping she'd be 9. Yeah. Sounds horrible, disgusting. But he's following his perfect man, ideal of a perfect man, and that would be Muhammad. So he sees nothing wrong with what he's doing. Sorry, Some of these things are just disgusting. One of my last articles of the night is extremely sad as well. I credit Jihad Watch for catching a lot of this. Christine Douglas Williams wrote an incredibly good article on this. Uganda. Muslim tells pastor he'll face wrath of Allah for refusing to remove his church, then murder him. This came out today. Churches are often vandalized and burned down, and Christians murdered by Muslims waging jihad. It's a 1,400-year-old story. It is all about executing the will of Allah as revealed in the Quran and Hadith, and expanding the realm of Sharia. Church pastor Stephen Laguerre was threatened by a group of Muslims that he would face the wrath of Allah for refusing to remove his church from building. They made good on their promise. Pastor Laguerre was murdered. According to his 23-year-old daughter, as they approached, one told her father, "We have told you to remove the church, which is near our mosque, but you have not heeded our message. Today you will face the wrath from Allah." It's from the Quran, chapter 8, verse 12. "I will cast terror into the heart of those who disbelieve. Therefore, strike off their heads and strike off every fingertip of them." Quran, again, 8:12. So when you hear people say Islam has nothing to do with terrorism, Allah is saying he is the creator of terrorism in chapter 8, verse 12. Thus, after Pastor Laguerre was hit with a big stick on the head, he was murdered by being slashed in the throat with a knife. And this source was Morningstar News, and his 23-year-old daughter. Yeah. His 23-year-old daughter had to share this news. This pastor had been untying his sheep from a tree trunk when three men dressed in Islamic attire shouted at them, and in a language unknown to her, said her daughter, Brenda Laguerre, they were brandishing long knives and blunt objects, and one yelled that Pastor Laguerre was a kafir who had harmed the religion of Allah, she said. Laguerre said that they approached. One told her father, "We have told you to remove the church, which is near our mosque, but you haven't heeded our message. Today you'll face the wrath of Allah." Then one of the assailants hit her dad with a big stick in the head, and he fell down, and another slashed his throat. So the women fled, so they wouldn't be killed. This is acceptable in Islam. How can we get the truth out about who Christ is to them? I say we have to live it. We have to be the ones that are able to show Christ by how we live. I think we have to look at Paul's words in Romans and live by that. It's one thing to live the way you think you should live, but it's another thing to strive to live for Christ. We will not allow these things. What am I going to say? I'm not allowing these horrible things to happen. No, these horrible things will still happen. What can we do to change things? We have to stand up, people. We have to stop being wimpy. What do I mean by that? When something's wrong, you stand up and let your voice be heard. If you don't believe in things like vaccines, get off your butt. Go join a local group that does protests. If you think things are wrong, get yourself in public office and start working on changing things. I see so many things I want to be involved in, and I wish I could get involved in a lot of things. But I can't do everything.
I felt God wanted me to change the message of my show from being just about Islam, which it was for close to 5 years, 3 years at least. But yeah, it was 4 years. I felt God changing this in January of 2020. And then, I changed the name of the show to the Sutliffian Report. It was called the Civilization Jihad Awareness, then changed to the Sutliffian Report. And then the quote, plandemic hit. And boy, I just kind of was surprised. We need to do more to reach out to those who do not yet know Christ. We have a responsibility to live it first. Live the gospel. It's not only to believe, it's to live it. We need to be able to open our mouths and tell people, you need to hear about Jesus, what he's done in your life, what he's done in my life. Share your story. I have about 8 minutes left. I'll give you a glimpse. I went to a church when I was a kid where it was very traditional. And a lot of the kids would, after the youth group got together, would go out in the woods and engage in things that would not be considered Christian. And I made a choice that I wanted to join them. I was going to join them after the church retreat was over. And during that church retreat, I had a vision of heaven. Scared the crap out of me. I kid you not, scared me so much I thought I was going to die. I cried that entire week. People thought I was nuts. Well, you know what? It didn't matter to me. Didn't matter to me, because the only thing that mattered to me is what I saw and not knowing what to do about it. And before I went to sleep that night, I decided I was going to make a choice for Christ. And I didn't even know what that meant. And here I was going to a church. It says something about where I was and what I was growing up in that I didn't know. Now that bothers me the more I think about it. But made that choice. My life is better and different. I'm not saying I've always been a great person. I haven't. I'm still growing. But it does an impact on your life. Now, when you make a choice for Christ, you have to live it. That's the hardest thing. It's one thing to believe. It's another thing to live it. When you do both together, you can change things. You can do things that you would never expect. And you can see God's promise in things that you'd never expect. I'm going to keep giving this message, I think, telling people to wake up, to watch, because there's just too much that we can't be quiet about. Now, I want to tell you about some great shows out there. We have out there, there are some great, great people who work with the Global Patriot Radio Show, out the radio network. Tomorrow we have Dr. Andrew Herod. He's on at noon. I'm giving the Eastern Standard Time. 10 o'clock on Saturday, we have Usama Dakdak. Sometimes I'm in the background. Pretty soon I'm going to be a guest on the show, so please do listen to Usama Dakdak. I do go and listen to him quite a lot. I learn a lot from him. Come back Sunday and Tuesday with Erica Kafiristan. Oh, my gosh. Crossing the Crescent discussion group here. Outstanding. I never cease to learn when I'm listening to them. I'm always impressed. Eric does outstanding research. You don't find enough scholars. This is the thing. Eric talks to the average person. And this is one of the reasons why I like him. His group talk to the average person. They don't go out and address things on a scholarly level. But yet they have done scholarly research. So they deserve a lot of credit. You find somebody out there that thinks they can challenge them, I'd love to see it. Go invite them. Come back Monday. We have Alan Vito, the Real Radio Man, Vito Esposito Show. Come listen to that. And then Wednesday, we have Hank of Poly Sports. And I want to say thank you for listening. If you're here in the StreamYard, I'm going to cut it out because I have to, I can't play the music on this. God bless you all. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. And on Black Talk Radio, it is time to say goodbye.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Here comes Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. I brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom. Start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole